let's start over again then. Okay, so we're holding on your Dalet on the bays, the third line of the middle five lines, line against Craven. Okay, so again, so we were discussing before the fact that the question of whether the korbanos of a nazir can be considered nidav, because on the one hand, you become a nazir by vowing to become a nazir, so in that sense it's a neder, but on the other hand, the fact is, once you become a nazir, then you're obligated to bring your korbanos. So that's what we ended up saying, that the korbanos of a nazir cannot be considered nidav on those grounds. It's considered a separate category, and that's why we said we need a separate word in the pasuk to tell us that that you can bring them on Chol HaMoed. Okay, so the question is, are you telling me there's any opinion that says that a nazir's korbanos are not considered a neder? You have a pasuk in Shmuel Beis, that tells how Avshalom is ready to begin his revolt against David. He's not going to begin it in Yerushalayim, where all David's men are. He wants to go to Chedron for it. So how does he do it? It says, at the end of 40 years, and the Gemara is going to explain soon 40 years of what? Avshalom says to the king, to David, El Chanov Avshalom is Nidri, Asher Nadarti Lashem Lechever, and let me go, please, and pay my neder, and fulfill my neder that I made to Hashem in Chevron, meaning that he's saying, I want to go to Chevron to fulfill my neder. And he continues, Ki neder nader abdech avakomer, because I, your servant, made a neder when I was in Geshur, when he had run away from Eretz Yisrael, that if I make it safely back to Eretz Yisrael, then I will serve Hashem, meaning that I'll be a nader. Now, Shalom, in fact, was a nader olam. The Gemara tells us in nader that he was a nazir olam, where once a year he would act as if he had finished his nazirus. He'd shave his hair, he'd bring his three karbanos, and then start his nazirus over again and continue this throughout his lifetime. So now he's saying that he wants to bring his karbanos. So my lava karban, on the face of it, when he says, I'm going to pay my neder, I'm going to fulfill my neder that I made to Hashem, on the face of it, he means he's going to bring his karbanos. Now, this is during the period before the Beis Hamikdash was built. You're allowed to bring karbanos anywhere in the world that you want. And not in the world, maybe, but at least you're allowed to bring them on a private bama. You don't have to bring them to the Beis Hamikdash. So it sounds like he's saying, then I made a neder that I'm going to bring these karbanos. So we see karbanos of a nazir can be considered a neder. The answer is the Gemara says, well, no, that's not what he means. He's talking about the actual neder of Nazirus that he made. He's saying, when I was in Chevron, he's saying, I made a neder of Nazirus. And now he's saying, I want to go to Gibeon, which is where the Mishkan was at the time, and where the Bama Gdola was at the time, and bring his korbanos. So therefore, no proof that the actual korbanos themselves are called the neder. He means that he's saying that you Machshon thought that what he means is I made a neder to bring my korbanos in Chevron, and therefore we see that, and therefore you can see that the korbanos are called the neder. The answer is no. He's saying I made a neder in Chevron to bring my korbanos. Okay, the question is, Iker nidre b'chevron? How about, what do you mean the actual neder he didn't make in Chevron? That took place when he was in the city of Geshur, because that's in the country of Geshur or whatever, because that's where he had run away to. So the Gemara answers, Amar of Acha, v'itema Rabba Bar of Chonon. You're right. It doesn't mean that he went to, it doesn't mean that he's saying, I made the neder in Geshur. What he means is, Loi holach Avshalom el lahavi kvasim mechevron. He doesn't mean I want to go to Chevron to bring my korbanos. It's true, he could bring his korbanos in Chevron at that time, but what he actually means is, I want to go to Chevron to get sheep for the korban, because the best quality sheep are, of the Gemara tells us in the Nachos, can be found in Chevron. So therefore, so again, no proof from that process that the korbanos themselves can be called the neder. We can say, in other words, for example, we can say, he made a neder that I'm going to go to Chevron to bring sheep for my korban. That itself would be the neder. The korbanos of the nazir itself wouldn't be considered the neder. So the Gemara says, Hachi nami mistabra. Yeah, in fact, it seems logical to understand the story that way. De'itema la'kruvi hu da'azil, because if you're going to tell me that he actually went to be makruv the korbanos in Chevron, you have to ask, why would he do that? And what would he use as an excuse? If David asked him, why are you doing that? Shavik Yerushalayim v'azol makir v'chevron. Would he abandon Yerushalayim and go bring the korbanos in Chevron? It's fine. It's during the period before the Beis Hamikdash is built. You can bring korbanos wherever you want, sure. But that wouldn't explain why he davka doesn't want to bring them in Yerushalayim, why he davka wants to bring them in Chevron. Wouldn't that make David suspicious? So it's more logical to say that all he was saying is, I want to go there to bring the animals for the korbanos. That would be a reasonable thing. Okay, the best quality animals you can get from Chevron. So therefore, that would be a good reason. But not to say that he was planning to actually bring the korbanos in Chevron. Okay, the Gemara says, Ve'elamai, so what are you going to say then? Lahobi kolosim Chevron. So okay, you're going to tell me then that he's saying he actually wants to go to Chevron to bring sheep. Fine, but then hi Hashem Adati Lashem b'Chevron. Fine, but why is he using the expression that I made a neder to Hashem in Chevron? Now we know the neder itself wasn't made in Chevron because he's saying the neder he made in Geshur, where in Aram, where he'd run away to. If you're telling me that he means that he's going to bring the korbanos in Chevron, okay, then the language makes sense. But if he means that he's just going to go to Chevron to bring the animals and then he's going to be mocked with them in Givon or Yerushalayim or whatever. Then it should say, I made a neder that I'm going to bring from Chevron. Why use the expression that I'm going to bring in Chevron? Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, no, after all said and done, we can say that we're talking about that he means he wants to be makviv in Chevron. So you're asking then why would he do that? What would be a reasonable reason why he would abandon Yerushalayim and bring the korbanos in Chevron? Well, after all, you forget about asking about Yerushalayim. Kitchiloch, you might as well ask a better question. Why forget about Yerushalayim? Why doesn't he go to Givon? Jemokim Kodeshu. After all, he should be. If you're going to argue like that, then better he should be going to Givon, which after all is a holy place because that's where the actual Mishkan and the Mizbeach that Moshe made is located.
Where was Givon?
Givon is a town a few miles northeast of Yerushalayim, but that was at the time. So after Mishkan Shiloh, we learned at the end of Zvachim, after Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, about 50 years before the story. At that point, they set up the Mishkan in the city of Noiv. And then a few years later, you have the whole story where Shaul, where Doeg mastered on the Kohen Gadol, and Shaul had him wipe out all the Kohenim of Noiv. And at that point, the Mishkan moved to the city of Givon. And it remained there for the next 40-odd years until Shlomo started building the Beit Mikdash in Yerushalayim. So at this time, the Mizbeach wasn't given, and then most of the Mishkan wasn't given. The Oren wasn't in given, that's why it didn't have the full status of a Mishkan. The Oren at that time was located in Yerushalayim. David had brought it there some years earlier. But the Mishkan itself wasn't given. So you, Machshon, are asking if the Pasuk means that he's going to bring his Karbonus in Chevron, and it has to be, because if it just means that he's going there to get animals, then the expression Bechevron doesn't really make sense. Then you might as well, instead of asking why he doesn't bring the korbanos in Yerushalayim and how he's going to excuse himself that I don't want to bring them in Yerushalayim, I want to bring them in Chevron, you might as well ask, well then why doesn't he just go to Givon and bring them over there? We know David didn't know at the time, he found out only later, but we who read the Pesukim know that really Avshalom was just trying to get out of Yerushalayim in order that he could start his rebellion. Well, he could just as easily do that in Givon as in Chevron. So then you might as well ask why he didn't plan to go to Givon to bring his korbanos. After all, in Givon, the Mizbeach was actually there. Ella, obviously the answer is that's not much of a question. Kivon Shehutra Bomos, at a period when Bomos Amutar Kol Hecha Deboi Makriv, then he's able to bring his korbanos wherever he wants. Well then, so in any case, if he anyway has to go to Chevron to get the sheep from there, then he might as well also be makriv them over there rather than going first to Chevron to get the sheep and then to Givon. So that's what it would mean. What he's actually saying is that he wants to go to Chevron. It's true he is going back to Chevron in order to get sheep. But he's also, while he's there, he's going to actually be makriv the korbanos there as well. The point is, though, that not necessarily is the korbanos themselves considered the neder. The neder could be The nether could well be this, that he's going to go gaps to there in order to get high quality animals. But then once he's there, he's going to actually be bringing the carbonus there as well. Now, in connection with, Tosfos points out, in the Gemara right before this, the previous piece of Gemara, we had talked about a machloikis, whether carbonus of another are able to be brought on a bamas yachid. Only Rav Meir says they can. So according to Rav Meir, this would work, that he goes to Chevron to get the sheep, and once he's there, he's already going to be mocked with them over there. According to Chachamim, who say that you can't bring carbonus of another on a bummer, of necessity it would have to be that, yes, he's saying, I'm going to go to Chevron to get the sheep, and then I'm going to go to Givon, and then I'm going to go to Givon to be mocked with them. Tosfos has further discussion on it. There are other opinions that say that carbonus of a nazi, we can't even bring in a bama gdola. So how would that opinion understand this for these psukim? They might say that maybe he wasn't a nazi, he's just bringing sam carbonus. Okay, the bottom line is we don't have any proof from that pasuk that the carbonus of a nazir are called a nether, even though the pasuk mentions that Avshalom said I made a nether. He doesn't necessarily mean that the nether refers to the actual carbonus themselves, and therefore there's no contradiction. Okay. So the Gemara says, by the way, Arboim Shana Laman. The pasuk is saying that at the end of 40 years is when the story happened, and Avshalom says, I want to go to Hebron, and that's when he starts his revolt. Arboim Shana Laman, 40 years since what? It doesn't mean the 40th year of David's reign, because we know that there were other events we know that David only ruled for 40 years, and there were other events described in the Pesukim happening after this. So obviously it can't mean that it was in the last year of David's reign. So what are we counting the 40 years from? So the answer is Tanya. We learn in a Braiser of Nehoroi, Mishum Rabbi Yeshua. Nehoroi says in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, Nikes Arboim Shana Shashalu Lahem Melech. It's 40 years from when the Jewish people first asked for a king. We know in Shmuel Aleph, you have the part over there where the people come to Shaul and ask him to appoint a king, and Shmuel is very upset about it. And to make a long story short, Hashem tells him to take Shaul and anoint him as king. And Shaul rules for a couple of years, and then later on you have Hashem rejects Shaul because of the story with Amalek and other things, and Hashem tells Shmuel to go and anoint David. So 40 years from when they first asked for a king and set this whole thing in motion is now when Avshalom rebelled. So what's the connection? Why is the prophet connecting those two things? So there are a few different answers. One of Tosfos and Nazir, you have the Gemara and Nazir as well. Tosfos over there answers that what it is like this: you have Avshalom rebelling against David. 40 years earlier, the Jewish people had rebelled against Hashem by asking for a king, because as Hashem says over there, when they asked for a king, as the prophet says over there, Shmuel was very upset about it, and he asked Hashem, what should I do? And Hashem tells him, you should know, they're not just rejecting you as their shofet, they're rejecting me as king. They should realize, as they realize throughout the period of the shofetim, that Hashem is our only true king. So now, like the prophet is connecting together these two rebellions against Hashem, and now 40 years later, Avshalom against David. Different answer: the Mefardish, the Pirish that's printed over there on the side of Nazir, attributed to Rashi, although apparently it's not really from Rashi, gives a different answer: that Avshalom knew that David is going to rule for 40 years, but he thought that the 40 years counts from when they first asked for a king. He didn't realize that he's jumping the gun a little bit, that it actually counts only from when David himself actually became king after Shaul passed away. Okay. Anyway, so did Tanya. What?
When did he think it was stopping?
Avshalom, according to this explanation, Avshalom thought that once it comes 40 years since the Jewish people had first asked for a king, that will be when David's reign is destined to end. So he figured, good, then this is a good time to rebel against him and I'll be successful. He didn't realize what it's going to end up being is the 40 years of David's reign are only going to actually be counted from when David himself became king, which is after Shaul passed away, after Shaul was killed in battle, which is a couple of years later. So Avshalom was jumping the gun a little bit.
Yeah, no, but one second. How can he thought the 40 years was started before he was king?
Good question. I guess maybe Avshalom might have thought that since in the end it turned out that Shaul was not the right king, like, you know, Hashem rejected him, etc., he might have thought, therefore, okay, so then, you know, in a certain sense, David's kingship can be said to have begun when they first asked for a king, because the right thing at that point would have been to pick David, and therefore he figured 40 years later, okay, then David's reign is over. Okay, again,
so
that's one.
David had not been picked at that time.
That's true, but nevertheless, he thought that maybe since David should have been picked at that time, maybe it counted. Okay, and I mean, this is the explanation that the Mefarish gives over there in Nazir. Again, Tosfos gives another explanation, which is the connection is that 40 years earlier, the Jewish people had rebelled against Hashem by demanding a king in the first place, and now, as a continuation of it, 40 years later, Avshalom is rebelling against David. Okay, whatever it is, those things happen 40 years apart. And how do we know that? The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, that year when the Jewish people asked for a king, that year was the 10th year of Shmuel's leadership of the Jewish people. Because we have like this, for 10 years from when Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed and Eli passed away, from that point, Shmuel became the leader of the Jewish people and led the Jewish people by himself for those 10 years. Then Shana Achas Shemolach Shol Shmuel Shemolach Shol Shmuel. Then the next year, Shol and Shmuel ruled jointly in the sense that Rashi explains that what it means is that we're talking about in the middle of that year. In other words, the 11th year began still with Shmuel exclusively in charge, and by the end of that year, Shaul had been appointed king. So in that sense, that 11th year can be counted as a year of both of them, the last year of Shmuel's exclusive rule and the first year of Shaul's. Rashi and Zvachim explained it differently, that what it means is the first year of Shaul's reign is considered also a joint rule of Shoals and Shmuel, because Shmuel was still guiding Shoal and telling him what to do and what not to do. After that, you have the story where Shoal failed to wipe out Amalek, and after that, the prophet says that, so Shmuel tells Shoal that you've been rejected as king, and from then on, the prophet says Shoal and Shmuel never met again. So at that point, then Shoal is having to handle things on his own. But you had 1 year when they were jointly. Then, after that, you have another 2 years when Shaul is ruling by himself without Shmuel to guide him. Then at that point, Shaul was killed in battle and David became king. And then from there, you have 37 years that David had been ruling by the time that Avshalom started his rebellion. So the 40 years break down to 1, 2, and 37 equals 40. Rashi brings a different girsa that actually from Seder Olam that it was actually 36 years of David's rule, because he says you have to count in the 10th year of Shaul's reign, and not Shaul, in the 10th year of Shmuel's leadership is already when they asked for a king, and then it was a few months later, it was the following year, when Shaul was actually appointed. So then according to that, you have the last year of Shmuel's sole leadership. That's the first year in which they asked for a king. Then the next year after that was the year when Shaul and Shmuel had joint rule. Then after that, you have another 2 years of Shaul by himself, and then 36 years of David. And then Tosfos brings yet another girsa from the 35th year of David, and then, you know, there's a couple of different girsas over here, but the bottom line is that it was 40 years from when they asked for a king until Avshalom began his rebellion, and therefore the pasuk recognizes that by saying that it happened in the 40th year. Okay. Mishnah says. Now we're going to talk about, we've talked a number of times in Seder Kodshim about the concept of Chatois HaMeses. The concept that there are certain cases where we have Halacha L'Moshe Mitzvah that a certain animal which has the kedusha of a chatas, instead of bringing it as a chatas, you're leaving it to die. Which, as we've learned a number of times, it doesn't mean you don't kill it via dying, because it is called shim. You lock it up in a room, and eventually it dies there. So these are called the chatois hamesis, and our Mishnah and the Gemara on it are going to discuss this issue of chatois hamesis and the halacha Mishnah Sinai behind it. We're also going to have in that connection an interesting piece of Agadta about what happened after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. So the Mishnah says, Chatas hayochid shekipru ba'aleha. Now, the basic rule is like this. There's five types of chatois hamesis. There's five cases of chatois hamesis, and the simon that's brought to remember them is the word vitimna, as in vitimna, actually, as in the pasuk in Vayishlach, vitimna hoisapilagesh le'elifaz. The word vitimna, vav tof mem nun ayin, stands for vlad chatos, the baby of a chatos, tmuras chatos, the tmura, which is why this discussion comes into our mesecha. Mesu ba'ala, the mem stands for mesu ba'ala, that the owner of the chatos died before the chatos was brought. Nun is niskafru ba'aleha, that the owner had his kapara with a different animal. As we'll discuss in the Gemara, you have the example, let's say, where you designated an animal for a chatos, and then the animal got lost, and so you brought a different animal for a chatos. That's the nun, niskafru ba'aleha. And the ayin is ovra shnasa, where in general, a chatos has to be an animal within its first year. So if the animal got too old, it's over a year old, you can't bring it to the chatos anymore, then that's the fifth case of chatoris amesis. Now, we also learned in the previous Mishnah, the reason why this discussion comes in over here is because it's also a continuation. We learned in the previous Mishnah about a number of dinim that apply only to Korbanos Yochid and not Korbanos Tzibur, and vice versa, so here's another one. Chatas ha-yochid shekipru ba'aleha, a chatas of an individual, where the owner had his kapara with something else, so, you know, he designated the animal, he lost it, so he brought a different animal as his chatas, then the original animal turned up. So then Mesa, that case is one of the five Chatois HaMesis. The Shotzibur ain't a Mesa. But if you have the same kind of thing happen with the Chatois of the Tzibur, then it's not left to die. Because the whole concept of Chatois HaMesis is, the Tanakama holds, is the whole concept of Chatois HaMesis only applies to Korbanos of a Yochid, not to Korbanos of Tzibur. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Thomas. Rabbi Yehuda said no. The same rules apply to the korban of a yochid and to a tzibur. So if there's a chatos like that where the tzibur was niskafru with another one, so they designated an animal for a chatos, then they lost it, then they brought a different one as the korban, and then this one turned up. Rabbi Yehuda says it has to be Thomas, just like if it was a chatos yochid. Reb Shimon is not actually arguing with the Tanakh. Reb Shimon is not a third opinion. Reb Shimon, as Shitra Mukobetis brings over here, that Reb Shimon is not a third opinion. He's going to explain why does the Tanakhama say that this concept of Kipru Ba'aleha does not apply to the Tzibur. He says, Ma Motzinu B'Vlad Chatas or B'Tmuras Chatas or B'Chatas Shemesu Ba'aleha. Let's consider three out of the five cases of chatois hamesis, the case of the baby of a chatos, the case of a tmura of a chatos, and the case of the chatos where the owner died, dvarim amurim b'yachid v'lay b'tzibur. Now, all of those, of necessity, only apply to chatois of a yachid, not to the tzibur. Because chatois of tzibur, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, are always males, so there's no such thing as a vlad chatos, of a chatos of the tzibur. There's no such thing as vlad chatos by them. Tmuras chatos there can't be either, because as we learned before, there's no such thing as a tmura of a korban of a tzibur. We said tmura only applies to korbanos of a yachid. Nor is there chatos shemesu ba'aleha, because as we're going to talk about in the Gemara, the tzibur never dies. The tzibur continues to exist for always. So those three cases never. Those three things never apply to a chatos of a tzibur. So Rav Shimon says, Afsh kipru ba'aleha v'she'ibra shnasa, so the same thing, the other two cases of chatois hamesis must also be the yachid dvarim amurim b'lay v'tzibur, they must only apply to a yachid and not a tzibur. So But Rav Yehuda would say that whichever one they're able to apply to the tzibur do. So Rav Yehuda would say that two out of the five do. And Rav Shimon, who was explaining what the Tanakhama says, no, if all of them can't apply to the tzibur, then none of them do. And since all of them can't apply, because three of them, Vlad and Tmura and Mesu Baleha, are not relevant to the tzibur, therefore neither do the other two apply to Korbanos of the tzibur either. So what actually happens, according to Rav Shimon, is that we'll treat the schatas in that case like any other case of psulei hamukdashin. We'll leave it to graze until it develops a mum, and then we'll sell it, and we'll use the money to buy an oichah. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Turn on Abaman. We learn in a braisa that these dinim. Let's talk about these dinim of chatoris hamesis. First of all, like this, mahu emachatas yobi. Why is it when it comes to a chatas, does the pasuk use the word yavi, he shall bring it? So the pasuk is mentioning over there, the pasuk is describing the various cases where a person brings a chatas. First it says that if he brings a female goat, here's the din. And then it continues, and if he brings a sheep, then here's the din. And it uses the word yavi. Now it doesn't need to. It's put it to setting is like this. The pasuk says, "In keves yavi korban lechatas." If as a sheep he shall bring his korban chatas. So you don't need to say the word yavi. Obviously he's bringing the korban. It could have just said, "In keves korban." So why the word yavi? So it means like this. Minayin that word teaches us as follows. Minayin l'maktish chatosai. How do we know if a person is maktish his animal for a korban chatos? V'avda, and then the animal got lost. V'hifrish acheres tachteha. He designated a different animal to compensate for it instead. V'nimtis harishona kayemes. Eventually we find the first one, and it's still alive, and it's still intact. And now you have both of them are equally well available to be brought as a korban. How do we know that you can bring as a korban whichever one you want? Therefore, that is why the pasuk mentions the word chatas, and it mentions yavi, he may bring. Means that he could bring either one. Yachol Yavi Shteyen, you would think maybe he has to bring both of them as the korban. No, Talmud Lema, Yivi En No. Therefore, no, the pasuk continues, he shall bring it. It meaning Ahmas Volo Shteyen, meaning he only brings one of them as a korban, not the other one. So in this case, he found that before he... Well, he found the... before he was marked with either one of them. So the Braisa is telling us the word Yavi teaches us he can bring either one for his chatas. Either one is equally valid, but the word Yavi Ena means he's only bringing one of them, not both. Okay. So now the question is, what do you do with the second one, which you're not being makriv? Amar Rav Amnona, so Rav Amnona says Tanya. Well, we learn in a Braisa that we have machlokes about it. Rav Yehuda says that you leave it to graze till it develops a mum, and then you redeem it. But Rav Shimon Omer Tomus, Rav Shimon says it's one of the five chatoris hamesis, so you have to leave it to die. So the question is, Mi Omer Rav Yehuda Tira? What do you mean? What do you mean that Rav Yehuda says you leave it to graze? But Rav Yehuda Tomus coming in late. We saw in the Mishnah that Rav Yehuda says even a chatas tibur, that in Skapru Baaleha, where you brought a different animal, where the tibur brought a different animal for their kapara, Rav Yehuda says even in that case, it's Tomus. Certainly, a chatas yachid, he would say that. So how can you tell me that Rav Yehuda would say tira? Okay, so it was an epoch. Fine, flip around the opinions in the Braisa. Rav Yehuda Omer Tomus, Rav Shimon Omer tira. That Rav Yehuda would be the one who says you have to leave it to die because you were in a scapa with a different one, and Rav Shimon would be the one who says that you would leave it to graze. Okay, but the problem with that is the Miyomer of Shimon Tira. What do you mean? Did Rav Shimon actually say that you leave it to graze in this case? V'ha'omer of Shimon chamash chaparis mesis. Rav Shimon himself mentions in the Mishnah the five cases of chaparis mesis, and one of them is chatas in a scapa ba'aleha. So, okay, Rav Shimon argues with Rav Yehuda whether they apply to Korbanos Tzibur, but he definitely agrees that all five of them apply to Korbanos Yachid. So how could you tell me that this is a classic case of Miskapru Baalah? Because the original animal was lost, and then you sound it, and you were makriv one of them, and now niskapru ba'ala. At that point, you had your kapara. You're not obligated to bring another chatas. So it seems that neither Rabbi Yehuda nor Rabbi Shimon can be saying tira. Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah that always tomos, even if it's a carbon seber. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold it. It applies to carbon seber, but he does agree it applies to carbon yachid. And here we're talking about a carbon yachid. So the Gemara answers Ella. I'm going to take out Omar Leah because there's no actual discussion between Amar Leah over here. Ella la olam loy tepuch. So no, after all, we can answer. You don't have to flip around the opinions. We can leave the braisa the way it was. That Rabbi Yehuda says tira and Rabbi Shimon says tamus because the loy kasha. There's no contradiction between with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion and our Mishnah. Kan ba'avuda b'shas hafrosha. Kan ba'avuda b'shas kapara. Because there's a difference. What happened? Where was the first animal? Where was the first animal when you actually have the kapara? Avuda b'shas hafrosha would mean like this. You designated the first animal for the chatos on Sunday. On Monday you lost it. On Tuesday you were makrish another animal. And on Wednesday, before you brought that second animal as a carbon, you found the original one. So now you have both animals standing in front of you, and you're picking which one you're going to bring as a carbon. So that Rabbi Yehuda would say, that's not part of the halacha of Mishnah Sinai of Chataris HaMesis. In other words, this case of as opposed to Kanva, Rabbi Shas Kapara, as opposed to when does Rabbi Yehuda hold of the concept of Chataris HaMesis, that you would have to leave it to die if it was still lost when you actually were makrish the second one. So you were makrish the second one on Monday, you were makrish it on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday the original animal showed up. That's when Rabbi Yehuda would say Tomos. And he says that would apply even to a chatas of a tzibur. But if the animal was found, if the first animal was found before you were makriv the second one, then Rabbi Yehuda would say tira. Shittim Kubetz's points out, by the way, the Gemara couldn't have said that that's true according to Rabbi Shimon, because actually later on in the Masechta we're going to learn that Rabbi Shimon holds that Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of that distinction at all. The Ibai Sema, or another way we can answer, Aidi Ba'aidi B'Shas HaFrasa, you could answer that both are talking about where both Braisa, both the Mishnah and the Braisa, are talking about that the original animal was lost at the time of HaFrasa, and you found it before the Kapara, but still V'loi Kasha, there's still no contradiction, because you have two different opinions of Tanoim within what Rabbi Yehuda holds. Ha Rabbi Yehuda Alibid the Rebbe, V'ha Rabbi Yehuda Alibid the Rabbanon. One you have later on in the sector a machloikus besides that we say over there that Rav Shimon says that there's no distinction whether the animal was found before or after kapara. You also have a machloikus between Rebbe and the Chachamim on the same point. If the animal was lost, was unavailable because it was lost at the time of Hafrasha of the second one, but it was found before Kapara, do we say that the original one is considered a Chatas HaMesa or not? So Rebbe holds Tomos even in that case. The Chachamim holds that it's not Tomos unless it was lost at the time when you were Miskaper with the second one. So therefore, on Mishnah, where Rabbi Yehuda says generically Tomos would be according to Rebbe's understanding, and the Braisa, where Rabbi Yehuda says Tira, would be according to the Chachamim's understanding that there is a case where it's Tira, namely where you found it before you actually brought the second one as the carbon. Okay. Fine. Continues the Gemara. Now in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is telling us that a chatas tzibur, if the tzibur had kapara with another animal, then Rabbi Yehuda says the concept of chataris hamesis applies over there also. So again, they have designated an animal for a chatas tzibur, a chatas of one of the chataris of the musafim, for example. They lost the animal, so they brought a different one instead. Then they found the original one, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying the original one tamus. How could there be such an opinion? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa based on a pasuk in Ezra, and again, no Tana can argue with a pasuk. The Braisa says, Kayose by Omer of Yossi. Rav Yossi said similarly. Now, Rashi says similarly implies that there's an earlier part of the Braisa, but Rashi says, I'm not sure what the original part, what the earlier part of the Braisa was. Tosfos brings from Toras Karinim, from Sikra, that is based on a pasuk in Baalotcha, where it talks about the korban that the Levim brought when they were first inaugurated to help with the service of the Mishkan. Anyway, Kayotze by Omer Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said similarly, just like over there you have a chatos and an oila, and Rabbi Yossi understands from the pesukim over there that the chatos there was a special type of chatos where it's not, the whole thing is burnt. Kayotze by Omer Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says similarly, you have a pasuk in Ezra where you have a similar concept. And the pasuk says, "V'haborim me'ashviv b'nei ha'gerva." Those who came back with Ezra from the captivity, the people of the Gola, the Kribu Olos, they brought, after the second Beis Hamikdash was built, they brought Olos to Hashem. And the Pasuk says, Parim Bnei Bakar Shnei Maser, Bnei Bakar, but the Pasuk, whatever, Parim Shnei Maser, they brought 12 oxen, Eilim Tishin the Shisha, it's supposed to be, 96 rams, Kvasim Shivan Veshiva, 77 sheep, Sfira chatas shnei maser and 12 goats as a chatas. Hakol oila lasem. All of them were an oila for Hashem. So what do you mean they were an oila? The chatas mikarva oila. Since one is a chatas brought as an oila, you just said the last thing you meant fine. The parim, the elam, and the kvasim, you can say are all oilas. But the pasuk clearly says that the sfira chatas, that the goats were that they were chatas. So what are you calling them? Hakol oila lasem. So Omar Rava, so Rava says, ki oila. No, what it means is they were chatos. They were brought like a chatos. The blood was applied to them as deach like the blood of a chatos. But they're similar to an oila in the sense ma oila ein anechelos. Just like an oila is not eaten, af chatos ein anechelos. The same way these chatos, these 12 goats, were not eaten either. Shahoyer Rav Yossi Omer, because Rav Yossi said, why not? Why didn't they eat them? Like, why didn't Karinim eat them like a regular chatas? Avodah Zarah Hevium. They brought them for the fact that the Jewish people had worshipped Avodah Zarah. Now, when were they worshipping Avodah Zarah? And you have the usual rule. When the Tzibur worships Avodah Zarah, the classic case we learned about in Horius, we actually had this discussion in Horius as well, is when the Sanhedrin mistakenly paskins that a certain type of Avodah Zarah is actually mutter, and most of the people follow it. Then when the Sanhedrin realizes their mistake, then they have to bring, so if it was a different mitzvah, if it was some other mitzvah, for example, they paskin that a certain type of Chilul Shabbos is allowed, or a certain type of Chalav is allowed, or what have you, then they would only be bringing the Par Helam Zavah Shal Tzibur, they would be bringing a Par, just an ox, or actually be set over there of Yehuda, set one for each shaver. If it's Avodah Zarah, then they bring a power and a sawyer for each shaver. So over here, they're bringing these korban, and the din is, those se'irim, the se'irim and istrofim, or se'irim and istrofim, as we say in morning davening, those are, the blood of them is sprinkled on the mezbeach, the whole animal is taken outside the machne or outside Yerushalayim and burnt. So that's what they did with them over here, and therefore these chatois can be called ola in the sense that they were completely burnt. Now, when did they worship Avodah Zarah? The Amr of Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, al Avodah Zarah shall also be made to Kiyahu. Specifically, they were bringing these korbanos because of the Avodah Zarah, which they had done in the times of Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu was the last king of Yehuda before the korban. So therefore, they're bringing these korbanos. They're bringing these korbanos for the fact that the Jewish people at the end of the time of the first Beis Hamikdash had worshipped Avodah Zarah. Okay. So now, fine. So that's the pasuk and that's the braisa on it. So the Gemara says, "Pasalka daiting." For purposes of the question, we assume l'man de'isle chatas tibur finiskafu ba'alei al-mesa. We would assume, for purposes of the question, that who, as we said in the Mishnah, holds that if the Sibur used a different animal for their kapara, then we say that the remaining animal is Lesa. It's one of the five kaparis of Mesis. We would assume that Isle Nami Chakas Sibur Shemesa Baaleha Mesa. We would assume that he would also hold that the other cases of kaparis of Mesis, including the one where if the owners of it die, that it's a Chakas Mesa, because we would assume the same way as the same way as Reb Shimon points out that all five of them go together, and if some of them don't apply to the Sibur, then none of them do. We would assume that Reb Yehuda would hold the same way, and that Reb Yehuda would hold in the same way as reverse, in the same way in reverse. So therefore he would hold that in this case, because the Tzibur died and the pastors, we're talking this is many, many years after the Churban Bayis Rishon, we would assume that everybody who was alive in those days and worshipped the Avodah Zarah died. So then, now over here you have the owners of the Tzibur who worshipped Avodah Zarah in Tzidkiyahu's time, so long since dead, we would assume. So the korban, yet we're saying we're bringing these korbanas. So how is Rabbi Yehuda telling us in the Mishnah that the concept of chatoris hamesis applies to korbanas Tzibur? We see it doesn't apply to this case where the owner died. So why would it apply to the case where the owner was miskapa with another one? Okay, Teresa was asked the question. I mean, the whole concept of chatoris hamesis is where you designated the animal for the korban, and then the owner died or was miskapa or whatever before you brought it. Here, they hadn't even designated the animals; they only designated them now when the second mishnah mikdash was built. So what does one have to do with the other? So they bring an answer from Rabbeinu Nisano that this is the very fact that they were able to designate these karbanas on behalf of people who are long since dead shows that yesh kapara l'meisim, shows that it's possible to do kapara on behalf of those who are already dead. Well, therefore, by that logic, then, if the owner died before, if you were already designated the animal for the korban, and then the owner died, mistama the same thing. There's no reason. You already designated the animal. Why shouldn't you be able to be makrubit? And yet, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be telling us in the Mishnah you can. So the Gemara answers, Amar Papa, your premise, says Rabbi Papa, your Makshin's premise is wrong. You're assuming that if Rabbi Yehuda holds that Niskafu Baalah is Mesa, then he also has to hold that that Mesu Baalah is applies to the Tibur. Not necessarily. Afilu Lamanda Omer Chakas Tibur Shakibur Baalah Mesa. Even Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that if the Tibur had their kapara with the Schatas, even Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that in that case that it is a Chakas Mesa, even though it's a carbon Tibur. Nevertheless, he doesn't have to hold. The same thing is true of Mesa Baalah. Chakas Tibur, from Mesa Baalah ain't a Mesa. You could say, though, that Rabbi Yehuda does agree that that doesn't apply to the case where Mesa Baalah, because of the difference. She ain't a Sibur Mason, because the Sibur never completely dies out. Because there's always the Jewish people. And even if you have the members of the Jewish people who were alive at that time, even if they've died, nevertheless, the Tzibur as a body still continues to exist. I have actually a couple of different ways of explaining it. One way of looking at it means, so to speak, the Jewish people are like a corporate body. Which never dies. There's always Jews alive, and therefore the later ones are a continuation of the earlier ones. Another way of looking at it is also because you never have the Sibur never dies all at once. You have individuals die, and over time the Sibur is replaced. Over time, you can say the Sibur of now is not the Sibur of 100 years ago, let's say, because there's nobody alive from 100 years ago. But in between, within those 100 years, you had people dying and people being born, and therefore there's always a continuation there. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda might hold that among the five cases of Chatoris HaMesis, Rabbi Yehuda would say some of them do apply to the Tzibur, in particular the one of Niskapru Baalah, where they use a different animal for the korban, and then this one turned up. Then Rabbi Yehuda would say that it is a Chatoris HaMesis. But on the other hand, when you're talking about the case of Nesubala, that's different because Eina Sibur Nes. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that concept does not apply to the Sibur. Therefore, yes, they could now be bringing Korbanos many years later for the Avodah Zarah that they did in Tzitzio's time.
Okay.
So the Gemara says,
Rabbi Yehuda, basically.
What's that?
Rabbi Yehuda sees two different situations.
Right. Rabbi Yehuda, in other words, right. So we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon would say that given that some of them can't apply to the Tzibur, namely Vlad Chatas can't apply to the Tzibur because the Tzibur's Korbanos are always males, and Tmuras Chatas can't apply because the Tzibur can't make a Tmura, and Nesu Balea doesn't apply for the same reason, Ein Tzibur Mason. Therefore, the Shimon says none of the other two apply either, the case of Miskatra Balea and the case of Arash Nasa. Rabbi Yehuda could say, I hold that Miskatra Balea would apply to the Tzibur, but I would agree that Nesu Balea doesn't apply to the Tzibur because Ein Tzibur Mason.
Okay.
So it must be Menolei L'Rapapaha. Where does Rapapa get that concept of Ein Tzibur Mason? Actually, later on in the Gemara, we're going to have a Braisa that says that, but still, the Gemara wants to find a source for it in a pasuk. The name of Mishum Dechtir Kacha Shavisecha Yuvanecha. Are you going to say it's on the basis of a pasuk in Tilim that says Kacha Shavisecha Yuvanecha in place of your fathers will be the children, implying, in other words, that the children take over for the fathers, and therefore the Tzibur never dies? If you're going to say it like that, Yehochia for the Yochid Nami, then the same thing could apply to a Yochid as well. If a Yochid has a son, and then the son inherited the carbon, then he should be able to bring the carbon. And we know that's not the case. The concept of Mesu Balah definitely applies to a Yochid, even though he had sons. Now, Ela Hainu Taima She'ena Tzibur Mesin, rather, we can say the reason why we see that the Tzibur doesn't die is based on Nisirei Regolim V'shal Rosh Chadashim. We can see that from the case of the various chataris that the Tzibur brings, the chataris that the Jewish people bring on Yom Tovim and on Rosh Chodashim. The Amar Achmona Aishinu Mitzrumas Alishka. The Torah tells us you bring them from Mitzrumas Alishka, from the collection of Matz Neshekel, is what you use to buy the animals for these karbanas. And now you have to consider, every year they collect the Machzor Shekel and they start buying the Korbanos of that year, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, but sometime during the year people die. The Dilma Mesum Arayu Dehanu Zuzi, so how do you know? Maybe before the Yom Tov, the particular person who gave this particular Machzor Shekel died, and now you're going and buying an animal and now you're going, the animal's already been bought, let's say. So let's say, for example, they have to bring a chatas, for example, on Rosh Chodesh. So suppose, for example, they buy the animal a couple of days before Rosh Chodesh. We learned in Erechin that the animals have to be checked for mumim a few days before you mark with them. So let's say they have to offer it on Rosh Chodesh, so they bought it 4 days earlier, let's say. During those 4 days, the person who gave the Machzor Shekel that they bought this animal with happened to die. Now wouldn't it be a chatas shemesu balah? And so how can yet the Torah is telling us to bring that animal as a carbon. Obviously, therefore, the answer is that shows that the tzibur are not mesim. Actually, in Horius, the Gemara mentions this proof, but rejects it because, after all, most of the people didn't die. And who says necessarily? Maybe it so happens nobody died during that period from when they bought the carbon until they were back with it. And the Gemara over there brings a different proof for this concept of Einat Sibur Mason. So the bottom line is, though, that we see from that we have a proof over here that Einat Sibur Mesim, this concept that we say that we bring these chataris, even though potentially some of the people who donated the Machzor Shekels that were used to buy these animals may have died in between. Acharonim also talk about the question, why wouldn't we say that the money is just bottle? What happened to Bittul Barov? And there's a few different answers. One answer that's given
is that the concept of bittul is only when you have isur mixed with heter. Here, at the time when they gave their master shekels, and when the master shekels were used to buy the carbon, everything was heter. There was no isur involved. Therefore, you can't say that it's bittul. That's one answer. Okay. The Gemara says the Ibaya Seima, or another answer I can give you as about this question of that they brought in the times of Ezra, that you were asking before, that how could they bring them according to Yehuda if the people who worshipped Avodah Zarah are long since dead, and that led us to answer that maybe Rabbi Yehuda would distinguish and say that Einat Sibur based him, and therefore you can bring, therefore there's no concept of Mesu Balel when it comes to a carbon Sibur. So Gemara says I don't need that answer. Another answer I can give: Kiyak Ravinu Lahani Chatoid. When they were makriv these animals for a chadas, achayi akrivinu, they were actually makriv them on behalf of people who are still alive, because there were people from Tzidkiyahu's time who many years later are still alive. Dichtiv, because after all, you have a pasuk earlier in Ezra that describes when they started laying the foundations for the second Beis Mikdash, for the Heichal. The pasuk says, "V'rabim me'akoyanim v'alavim v'roshei ha'aves askenim." Many of the koyanim and levim and the heads of the family, the elder heads of the families, asher roh et habayit zarishin b'yostei zafayis. They had seen the first Beis Mikdash when it still stood. So now, when this second Beis Mikdash was being founded, they were crying loudly because they remembered the first Beis Mikdash was grand and beautiful, and the second Beis Mikdash, when it was first built, was much plainer and simpler because the people couldn't afford to build it as grandly as Shlomo did. Later on, hundreds of years later, Yad Hurdus renovated it, and the Gemara says about Hurdus's renovation of this Mikdash that anybody who never saw the Beis Mikdash never saw a really beautiful building. But that was 300 years after these events. At the time now, 350 years after this time, when the second Beis Mikdash was being built, it looked, the old people who remembered the first Beis Mikdash felt that it looked very plain compared to the second one, because the second Beis Mikdash looked very plain compared to the first one. So they were crying. So obviously, therefore, there were still people alive who remembered the first, who were there for the first Beis Mikdash. So those people are the ones. They could be bringing the carbon. They could be bringing the carbon on behalf of them. Yeah, the Gemara says, V'duma hanach miyota. Okay, so what though? It still could be those old people are maybe only a minority of the tzibur. The chathas of Avodah Zarah, you only bring up most of the tzibur worshipped Avodah Zarah. So obviously, going back to, we were discussing before how they could be bringing, how according to the Yehuda, they could be bringing these chatois if the people died, and that led us to say, Einat Sibur Mesim. So now, apparently, the Gemara is saying, you still need that answer, because If you say that the tzibur is mess, that you go according to the individuals who, when they're alive, when they're not, well then, okay, right now you only have a minority, the pashtus, you only have a minority of the people are still so old as to remember the first Beis Mikdash and worship the Avodah Zarah at that time. And therefore you would say that, the only reason you could be bringing the carbon is on the grounds of Einat Sibur Mesim. But you still have to say that. You still can't say they're bringing it just on behalf of just the living people and that you're ignoring the dead people, because the living people, the Pashtus, are not a majority of the people who are standing there when the second Beis Mikdash is being built. There's a different explanation that the Ramah brings, which the Tosfos HaRosh brings on it, the question is, who says that the people who are alive now represent the majority of the people who were alive in Tzidkiyahu's time? Not the question is whether they represent a majority of the people now, but do they represent a majority of the people who were alive at the end of the first Beis Mikdash and who were involved in worshiping Avodah Zarah? And the Gemara says, you can't say that they're only a minority. They must have been a majority. Because the pasuk continues. The Gemara kind of paraphrases the pasuk over here. The actual correct gusa in the pasuk is on the side. The people who were standing there and watching could not hear the sound of the pasuk. The pasuk describes over there like this: you have two groups of people. You have the old people who are crying because they remember the grandeur of the first Beis Mikdash, and they're contrasting it with the plainness of the second Beis Mikdash. And then you had, on the other hand, the young people who weren't alive for the first Beis Mikdash. They're happy. they're shouting with happiness that the second Beis HaMikdash is being built. But the Pasuk says, the people could not distinguish, could not recognize the sound of the shouts of joy because of the cries of the people, because the cries of the old people overpowered, were louder than the shouts of joy of the younger people. So you see from that therefore the old people must have been the majority.
Alexander, I have to interrupt you. Do you want to continue later on tonight or tomorrow?
We'll continue tomorrow, that's the same. But it's fine. Anyway, this is a halfway decent stopping point, I guess. You know what? Actually, if we can go on for like three more lines, and if we have time to go on for like three more lines, then we're at a good stopping point. Okay. So the Gemara asks, okay, you're telling me they brought these animals for Karbanos because of Avodah Zarah they worshipped in 60 hours' time, but the question is, that whole concept of bringing these Karbanos is only when it was the Shergig, and here it's not the Shergig. The Heichi Makrivi, how are they being mastered these Karbanos? They were doing the whole thing amazing. The answer is, Amar Rabbi Yechanan HaRas Shahai. So the answer is, Rabbi Yechanan says, you're right. Normally you wouldn't, but here was a special one-time tack by the Beis Din of that time, by Ezra's Beis Din, that they should bring it. Which, of course, answers the question in that case. The Gemara first points out, the Gemara says in that case, then we can answer that even if the people were dead, then it doesn't matter because it was Hadrashah. And the Gemara says, Hachi Namim Stabber. In fact, it's logical it must have been a Hadrashah. The Ilay Tema Hachi, because otherwise, you're not going to say that. Bishlema Porim Usir. I can understand why the Pasuk says they brought 12 oxen and 12 goats, because one for each Shevet. Ela Klosim Kineged Me. But after all, you would have to ask, Why 96 sheep and 96 rams and 77 sheep? Why those numbers, after? Ela Hadrashah. So obviously it must have been a Hadrashah to bring all those korbanos. And in fact, the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Beis HaKedusha that these were korbanos miluim, the same way as they brought unusual korbanos when the Mishkan was first inaugurated and when the first Beis HaMikdash was inaugurated, and the Asid Lava is very similar when the third Beis HaMikdash was inaugurated, also in Yechezkel describes special korbanos. The same way, these korbanos that they're bringing now were a special thing for the inauguration of the second Beis HaMikdash. Not necessarily to do with the whole matter of Chatzaris Desire. So therefore, we don't need all the answers before about how many people were still alive from 50 hours' times and how many were not.
Okay.
Okay.
Very much. 8:15.